Okay, welcome you guys. So glad to see you. It's our last meeting of the workshop. Congratulations for toughing it out and making it through. I hope you've had a great experience, a personal experience that gives you the ability to remain recovered one day at a time and also the ability to stick your hand out there, really go carry your experience and your message through this process and these steps that you've been through to somebody else. Thank you, Lord, for this opportunity and the blessing of these men and women that have graced me with their presence and their effort and their willingness. And thank you, Lord, for allowing me to be a channel, a vessel of your power and your grace through this process. Please give us the courage to take this knowledge, this experience, this love and compassion for ourselves that we've gained and express it to others. Give us the willingness to stick our hand out to people that are suffering. Help us to see the truth tonight about how important that is to our own personal recovery. Thank you again, Lord, for your grace and your power in our lives. Amen. Okay, so tonight we're going to go over working with others. So they put all this into 1 week, which is kind of a lot. So just going to start reading. So this is chapter 7, working with others. It tells us to use this chapter as a tool to reflect on a spiritual awakening as a result of this process. So it says here that practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. So the whole point of this 23-week process is to get you guys right here. Nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with another alcoholic or an addict. So please consider that, keep that in mind. Ask yourself the question, do I believe that? Do I really need that? A lot of the times we get to this place of, well, I'm not qualified. So I beg of you to lay aside that prejudice for yourself and that judgment of yourself and allow this process to work through you and allow yourself to grow through the experience of taking other people through the steps. Yes, you will become more comfortable doing it. Yes, you will feel more worthy at times. But allow yourselves to have this experience. And don't sit around and wait for somebody to come and ask you. Pray about it. Meditate about it. Stick your hand out. Put yourself out there. Go to meetings. Go to different meetings, talk to people, talk to your sponsors, their sponsors, other people that are doing the work this way. Let them all know that you have completed this work and your priority is to find somebody to take you the work because you believe that nothing will so much ensure your own immunity from drinking or using again as intensive work with another alcoholic. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. We're going to carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help. We can help when other people cannot. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember that they are very ill. Remember how you felt when we first started this. Remember the experience that you've had and how you feel today. And share that with somebody. Grace them with your presence and the power of God that's in your life today. What will happen when we do this? Life's going to take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. So if you feel your fellowship isn't strong enough, and I'm guilty of isolating, not really reaching out to too many people. What I've found in the last couple of years is that the relationships I'm building are with people that I'm taking through the work. So allow that to be the basis of this fellowship that's growing up about you. Think about the level of intimacy that you created, the honesty, the vulnerability as you went through the steps. This time with your step guide or sponsor or your homework leader, and understand that that type of relationship can be built with everybody that you take through the work. Perhaps you're not acquainted with any drinkers who want to recover. You can easily find some by asking a few doctors, ministers, priests, or hospitals. We don't have to do that. We go to meetings all the time, right? We're engaged in Alcoholics Anonymous. Says they'll will only be too glad to assist you. I feel that spearheads of this program that we see and that we are attracted to and that we know are taking action, those are the people that will only be too glad to assist you. So go and ask them. Say, hey, I'm looking to work with somebody. What do you got? Maybe you can get involved in a workshop. Maybe they know somebody that's looking for a sponsor. Unfortunately, a lot of prejudice exists, so you're going to be handicapped if you arouse it. Ministers and doctors are competent, and you can learn much from them if you wish. But it happens that because of your own drinking experience, you can be uniquely useful to other alcoholics. So cooperate, never criticize. To be helpful is our only aim. So the cool thing about this chapter, it's going to lay out some very, very clear cut directions on sponsorship. And when you have questions, someone I've taken to the work, Jason, somebody asked me to help them out. I don't know what to do. I always refer them to this chapter. Just go read the chapter. Go read it slowly. You will find the answers. So when you discover a prospect for Alcoholics Anonymous, find out all you can about them, right? First thing you do, have a conversation, find out about them or her. If he doesn't want to stop drinking, don't waste time trying to persuade him. You may spoil a later opportunity. This advice is given for his family also. They should be patient, realizing that they're dealing with a sick person. So we don't want to chase people around, but we want to stick our hand out. And if they don't want to stop, we're going to search for somebody else. Is there any indication? If there's any indication that he wants to stop, have a good talk with the person most interested in him, usually his wife. So remember, this text was written in 1939. So some of it we're going to kind of have to take with a grain of salt. My experience is that I have found that I'm talking to the wife of someone that I'm sponsoring later on down the line. So I get close with them, or maybe they're kind of falling off or faltering a little bit. But I do think it's a good idea to know his family, her family, the history. But we're not trying to invade privacy. It's important. I think of utmost importance is that this particular person can trust us 100%. You know, anything they say is in the utmost confidence. We want to get an idea of his behavior, his problems, his background, the seriousness of his condition, and his religious leanings. I think it's very important to talk about, I'm not coming at you talking about my religion or my belief in God, especially at this point, we're just having a conversation. But in that initial conversation, somebody has brought to my knowledge, like, hey, I want you to help me. It's, okay, well, let's have a talk. Let's meet up. Let's get a cup of coffee. And one of the questions that comes up is, what is your background with religion or lack thereof? What does it look like? It'll kind of help you moving forward. You need this information to put yourself in his place to see how you would like him to approach you if the tables were turned. Sometimes it's wise to wait until he goes on a bench. The family may object to this, but unless he is in a dangerous physical condition, it's better to risk it. We don't deal with them when they're very drunk unless he is ugly and the family needs your help. Wait for the end of a spree or at least a lucid interval. Then let his family or friend ask if he wants to quit for good and if he would go to any extreme to do so. If he says yes, then his attention should be drawn to you as a person who has recovered. So the initial question, too, in this first meeting is, look, man, are you willing to go to any length to overcome what you're suffering from? They say yes, and I say, okay, well, let me let you know what I did. I'm not telling you what to do. I can just let you know what I did. You should be described to him as one of a fellowship who has part of their own recovery. Try to help others. We'll be glad to talk to him if he cares to see you. If he doesn't want to see you, never force yourself upon him. Neither should the family hysterically plead with him to do anything, nor should they tell him much about you. They should wait for the end of his next drinking bout. You might place this book where he can see it in the interval. Here, no specific rule can be given. The family must decide these things, but urge them not to be over anxious, for that might spoil manners. Now, there might be a chance that some family approaches you. It's pretty rare nowadays because, again, they didn't have this program, Alcoholics Anonymous. So families were reaching out to people in this movement that they had heard of. How are these people recovering from this horrible disease? And so back then is a little bit different. A lot of the times, the first 100 were dealing directly with the families before they even talked to the alcoholic. And the family saying, please help us. We don't know what to do anymore. We've heard that you found a way to recover. Not necessarily the case today. Usually we are going to be one-on-one with this person, see him in a meeting. Someone's going to refer him to us. So usually the family should not try to tell your story. When possible, avoid meeting the man through his family. Approach through a doctor, an institution is a better bet. If your man needs hospitalization, he should have it, but not forcibly unless he is violent. Let the doctor, if he will, tell him he has something in the way of a solution. And nowadays, with all the treatment centers, the last thing they tell everybody in any treatment center is to go to AA. So they're sending them our way. They're walking in the rooms wet, suffering, struggling, desperate. You just have to open your eyes and pay attention. Every time you're in a meeting and someone introduces themselves as a newcomer, pay attention. At the end of the meeting, go talk to that person. So when a man is better, doctor might suggest a visit from you. Though you have talked with the family, leave him out of the first discussion. Under these conditions, your prospect will see these under no pressure. He will feel he can deal with you without being nagged by his family. Call on him while he's still jittery. He may be more receptive when depressed. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. We want to make them feel comfortable. Get them to talk about themselves. Remember, it told us that the ex-problem drinker who's properly armed with facts about himself can usually get through to the alcoholic or the addict within a matter of hours, right? Because we're armed with facts about ourselves. We want to open up to them and just get them to talk about themselves. If they wish to talk, let them do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he's not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. So we're not talking about spiritual things yet. If he's in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. So we're not trying to preach to them. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. So once they understand that you know and have experience with what they're going through, and you can share with them that you're an alcoholic. And again, we're both in the rooms of AA. I'm walking up to you. Everybody knows, right? I'm an addict. I'm an alcoholic. You're an actor. So we're kind of bypass a lot of this stuff. And that's why I just want to lean heavily on stick your hand out. Stick your hand out and then go have an open, honest conversation with them. Don't chase them around. If they want help, they're going to ask to see you again. But remember how nervous you were, how scared you were, and how hard it was to go up to somebody initially and ask for help. So we can help with that. So we want to tell them how baffled we were and how we finally learned that we were sick. We'll give them account of the struggles that we made to stop. Show them the mental twist that leads to the first drink of a spree. So it's great, great topic for conversation is how I wanted to stop and then I was able for a little bit, but for some reason, even though I knew the consequences and my past, I went against everything I knew was right and I did it again. We suggest you do this as we have done in the chapter on alcoholism. So chapter 3, more about alcoholism, is all about the mental obsession. If he's an alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He'll match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. That's what we want. We want to open him up and say, hey, did you think like this? Did you feel like that? Well, check it out. I found a program that worked for me. And if you're willing to go to any length, maybe I can help you. If you're satisfied that he's a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Right? Show them from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding the first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. So now I'm letting them know how I'm not weak and I'm not a loser. I'm suffering from this malady that's driving this mental condition that is completely disabling me from thinking clearly and making right choices. In fact, I don't even have a choice. Right? Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he's seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him he possibly can. If he's not too alcoholic, but insists that if he's severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. So, okay, bro, I'm not telling you that you're like me. I'm just sharing my condition with you. I'm offering help. If you're looking at me and saying, hey, I think I can still control this, I'm not here to tell you you can't. What I can tell you is that if you are like me, then you're not going to be able to. And if you want to go and try, I'll be here when you come back. I'm not here to judge you. So we're going to continue to speak of this alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady, right? This sickness. We're going to talk about the conditions of the body and the mind which accompany it. So opening up, letting him know that I'm one of him, getting him to relate, right? Hey, bro, when you started drinking, did you find it hard to control the amount you take? Or hey, bro, when you wanted to stay stopped with every fiber in your being, did you find that you couldn't stay stopped? Oh, me too. Me too. Check it out. I found a solution for that, man. It's a miracle. So we're going to keep his attention focused mainly on our personal experience. We're going to explain that many are doomed to never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it's going to serve some good purpose. But you may talk to them about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he's an alcoholic, so much the better. And even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he's become very curious to know how you got well. So let him ask you that question. If he will, tell him exactly what happened to you. Now we're going to stress the spiritual feature freely. So I've got him to open up. Maybe he called me back and said, you know what? I'm interested, man. I think I want to go through this work, go through these steps. How did you do it? How did you do it? I remember we've had a conversation about his religious background. And so we're kind of aware of his level of prejudice. Some people are very adamant about, I can't stand the word God and I don't want nothing to do with any of that. They may even say, hey, I'm an atheist. Okay, that's fine. But you just asked me, how did I do it? So I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm about to share with you that this power of God in my life has changed my life. And the surrender to him and doing these steps is what has changed my life. So if the man be an agnostic or an atheist, make it emphatic that he doesn't have to agree with your conception of God. That's in italics. So you don't have to agree with my conception of God, bro. I'm just letting you know what worked for me. And check it out. You can choose any conception you want, as long as it makes sense to you. But here's the thing. There are some requirements here. This is in italics too. And this is real. We can't recover without it. The main thing is that you are willing to believe in a power greater than yourself and that you're willing to live by spiritual principles. So that's it in a nutshell. People come to you and say, what am I going to have to do here? Okay, check it out. You're going to need to believe in a power greater than yourself and you're going to need to live by spiritual principles. That's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. When you're dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. What does that mean? Well, if I harm someone, man, I apologize immediately. If I'm building resentment, man, I got to put it on paper and talk to somebody that I trust about it. When I wake up in the morning, I ask God for guidance to help me with my thoughts, right? At the end of the day, I'm kind of reflecting on how I behave. And asking God for more help. And the biggest thing I'm doing is helping you today. That's what you tell them. I'm here. My hand's out, right? There's no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conditions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues no matter what your own convictions are. We're not trying to convert him. We're just helping them wake up. That's what we're doing. We just want to wake them up. Your prospect may belong to a religious denomination. His religious education and training may be far superior to yours. In that case, he's going to wonder how he can add anything to what he already knows. All right, I've had this scenario happen too, but I go to church, man. I believe in God. Okay. He's still going to be curious to learn why his own convictions haven't worked and why yours seem to work so well. He may be an example of the truth that faith alone is insufficient. To be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. There's your definition of living life by spiritual principles. See, what I say to them is, okay, look, I get it. You've been going to church. You believe in God. Jesus Christ is your savior. Why isn't that enough? Why hasn't that been enough for you? What are you missing? Remember, faith without works is dead. And it says here, to be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action, spiritual principles. Faith alone is insufficient for an alcoholic or an addict. Let him see that you're not there to instruct him in religion. Admit that he probably knows more about it than you do, but call his attention to the fact that however deep his faith and knowledge, he could have applied it or he wouldn't drink. Perhaps your story is going to help him see where he failed to practice the very precepts he knows so well. So it's going to, light bulb's going to go off like, wow, yeah, I believe, I'm Christian, man. I believe in Jesus. And he's my savior and he's supposed to give me relief. I'm supposed to turn my life over to him. Why am I suffering? There's been no unselfish, constructive action combined with some self-sacrifice. We're going to represent no particular faith or denomination here in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're dealing only with general principles common to most denominations, spiritual paths. We're going to outline the program of action, explain how we made a self-appraisal. So I'm going to tell them, hey, this is what inventory I did. It's kind of what it looks like, right? How I straightened out my past. I went out and I made the amends. And why I'm now endeavoring to be helpful to him. So I'm talking about my 4-step, my 9-step, my 12-step. It's important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you're helping him. Shared in a meeting the other night. Topic was the 12-step. Why I started this workshop. I started this workshop for one reason only, because I did not want to drink or get high. That's why. I didn't do it out of the goodness of my heart. I didn't do it out of this willingness to be helpful. I didn't do it to blow my ego up. I didn't do it to look good or to become some mentor or to find sponsees. I did it because I believe that nothing will ensure immunity for me from alcohol and drugs more than intensive work with another alcoholic. Big Book Awakening, the step process that we do through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, is intensive work with another alcoholic. Absolutely. I sat on my porch. I looked at my wife. I said, I am going to start a workshop. I had never done one. I had never been a part of one. I didn't know what was involved. And I said, I'm going to do it for one reason only, because I don't want to drink or get high. That's it. So I did it. Because I believe that you guys have helped me in these last 23 weeks more than I've helped you. I believe it to my core. And if you can sit there and say, well, wait a minute, but you kind of really helped me. Like, you kind of opened my eyes to some stuff. Well, then hear the power in what I'm telling you. If I made a little bit of a difference, and mind you, I only did that by being a channel or a vessel of this program, this book, and the power of God. That's it. I'm just a tool. None of this is me. Okay, so if this experience in your mind had anything to do with my helpfulness and my generosity and my availability, then consider how vital it is when I tell you that you helped me so much more than I helped you. Like, for real. And I know it sounds kind of cliche because you hear it all the time. And the only way that you're going to really experience that is to get out there and do this over and over and over again. And when you feel less than or unworthy or not good enough to do it, do it again. Do it again. Find somebody else. Keep on doing it. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, and that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Very important when we sit down with someone and we first start talking to them, we tell them, this is not a commitment. You're not obligated. You're doing this on your own free will. And if you tell me you're done, you're done. I'm going to go find somebody else. Doesn't mean I don't care about you. Doesn't mean I'm not praying for you. Doesn't mean I don't wish from the bottom of my heart that you would help get this thing by getting rid of all these ugly things in your life. Go help someone else. We need to understand, as recovered alcoholics and addicts, it's not for everybody. Everybody's not ready. And you'll experience that as you get out there. You have people break your heart, man. You're going to cry. People are going to die. I mean, this is real. It's scary. So let him know he's under no pressure. He doesn't need to see you again if you don't want to. The beauty of going through the work, this big book awakening process, this way of the step work, we don't have to say, man, I'm done working with you. You either show up or you don't. You either do the inventory or you don't. And if you don't, then we're done. It's simple. No big deal. I'll move on to someone else. I can sit around and wait and say, hey, well, I'll give you another week or I'll give you another month. You know, why are you thinking in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous? If you frequent Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and you have heard most of any step where people are, I'm on my fourth step. That's what you hear. That's where they stay. They get stuck, right? We don't do that. So don't be offended if they want to call it off because he's helped you more than you have helped him. Right? If your talk's been sane, quiet, full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you've disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all too good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He'll be more likely to follow your suggestions. So remember, we're planting seeds. And I truly believe that once this process begins, a lot of people have chronic relapse in their journey. It doesn't go away. And there's a part of your spirit that's been touched, and you're going to either be tormented by this or surrender to it. It's just a matter of time, and it's not my time. I say that because that was my own experience. I tried to just completely turn my back on it, walk away, and I couldn't. I think once we open our hearts to the power of God in our lives, he's been so patient for so long, waiting for that moment, that the wheels just start turning. And the journey may take a turn, or it may get a real ugly before it gets better. So your candidate may be given reasons why he need not follow all the program. He may rebel at the thought of a drastic house cleaning, which requires discussion with other people. Don't contradict him. Tell him you felt the same way. But I'm going to doubt that I would have made any progress had I not taken action. So my first visit, I'm going to tell him about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. If he shows interest, I'm going to give you the copy of the book. Okay? Unless your friend wants to talk further about himself, don't wear out your welcome. Give him a chance to think it over. If you do stay, let him steer the conversation in any direction he likes. Sometimes a new man is anxious to proceed at once. You may be tempted to let him do so. This is sometimes a mistake. If he has trouble later, he's likely to say you rushed him. You'll be most successful with alcoholics if you don't exhibit any passion for crusade or reform. So this is our process. This is how long it's going to take. That's why I really love the work this way, because it's structured. And I can give you a sponsorship guide and say, here, look, these are the assignments. This is how it's going to go. We're making a commitment to meet for 23 weeks, once a week, for 2 hours. If you decide you don't want to go or show up, or okay, then we're done. So I'm willing to commit to you. You're willing to commit to me. You're not going to offend me if you leave. And you don't have to do this. So unless your friend wants to talk further about himself, don't wear out your welcome. Give him a chance to think it over. If you do stay, let him steer the conversation in any direction he likes. Oh, I just read that. So no passion or crusade. for reform. Never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop. Simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspection. Show him how they work with you. Offer him friendship and fellowship. Tell him that if he wants to get well, you will do anything to help. So remember, they told us that we have two choices. We can go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of an intolerable situation as best we can, or we can accept spiritual help. It's a great, you can read that out of the book. That's out on the bottom of page 25, I believe. Let me confirm that. Yep. Bottom of page 25. You got two choices, man. You can continue blotting out this consciousness. You can accept spiritual help. It's up to you. You want me to lay out the kit of spiritual tools that work for me? I'm more than willing. I'm right here. If he's not interested in your solution, if he expects you to act only as a banker for his financial difficulties or nurse for his sprees, you may have to drop him until he changes his mind. This he may do after he gets hurt some more. Kind of speaks for itself. All they're asking for is money, place to stay. They don't really want to work a program. There it says you might have to drop them. I got to be honest with you. Hey, man, I feel like you're taking advantage of me. I'm just trying to take you through the steps and be here for you. If he's sincerely interested and wants to see you again, ask him to read this book in the interval. So the book tells us to give him this book and say, here, read it. That's what was done with me when I first walked in the door and asked for a sponsor. I want you to read 164 pages. Come back to me and let me know if you want to do this. Talk to people in Big Book Awakening and they say, oh no, we don't do that. Well, you know what, man? The book's here. The words are here. You do what you will. Okay. I will tell you again, when you want to understand working with others and you're new to it, or you don't feel confident or comfortable, go to this chapter. Read it. Reread it. Nothing wrong with giving somebody the book and say, but I have people tell me, well, I can't make it that long sober. Okay. Well, you know, I don't know. How bad do you want to recover? Are you willing to go to any length? You know, can you read 12 pages a day? So we're talking about what? Can you read 16 pages a day? Then you'll be done in 10 days. Come on back to me, you know? Well, I can't do that. Okay. I don't know. Or don't. I mean, I don't necessarily do that anymore. I kind of contemplate and pray on it. And if sometimes this whole Big Book Awakening process is a little intense, especially for people that have never, ever been through the work or don't know. And you guys are going to be carrying these tools around. So I want you to kind of consider that too. There's always... the inventory process we do is wonderful. Can incorporate that with anybody. But sometimes we want to go to God. Where do I start? Maybe in meditation, just give him the book like it says on page 95. Just have him read it. And then take some time to think and then have a conversation with them. I don't know. Nothing wrong with that. I couldn't wait. I read that thing within 6 days and went back to that dude and said, okay, I'm ready. Let's go. That's me though. You know, I was dying. I wanted help. He asked me a question that I will never ever forget. He said, did you choose not to drink today? I was at a meeting. I said, yeah. And he said, then what the fuck are you doing here? And I was like, whoa, what do you mean? Now you got me. Will you sponsor me? That's how it went down. I was like, dude, I don't even know what you were talking. What do you mean? And then once I finally understood, like, if I could choose not to drink, I wouldn't need this here with you guys. Right? If my willpower was strong enough. So sometimes we gotta maybe trick them a little bit, you know, let them know that we have a good understanding of what's going on and we might be able to help them a little bit. So if he's sincerely interested, okay, we're going to have him read the book in the interval. After doing that, he must decide for himself whether he wants to go on. He should not be pushed or prodded by you, his wife, or his friends. If he is to find God, the desire must come from within. Right? And remember, we talked about all of this stuff being required. There's this transformation to all of a sudden these things are desired by us. And so, and the way that I walk it back, all the way back is, if when anybody walked into the room of Alcoholics Anonymous and we said, it is required that you bow down to God, people would be like, dude, whatever, this church, I'm out of here, right? What happens when we walk through the doors for the very, very, very first time, everybody desires help from God. They're dying, right? And then all of a sudden they get sober, they get a little bit better, and now, I got a problem, all the prejudice comes back, and they don't really know, and they lean on this whole own conception of God, which is fine. Whatever it takes to get them through the work. But we want somebody who is to find God to desire that. Can't give that to them. It's got to come from within. It says, if he's to find God, the desire must come from within. People come to you and say, I can't connect. I can't find this God. I'm struggling. I understand. All I can do is share with you my experience with it, the power in my life, how it's changed my life. But I cannot give you that desire. I can't. And if the time comes in your guys' life where you're kind of struggling, just ask you, what happened to the desire? Why don't I have the desire? What's going on? Recognize it. Talk to somebody about it. You've got the tools. That's the thing. You've got the tools. So if this person thinks he can do the job in some other way or prefers some other spiritual approach, encourage him to follow his own conscience. We have no monopoly on God. We merely have an approach that worked with us. But point out that we alcoholics have much in common. And that you would like, in any case, to be friendly. Let it go at that. Right? Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. So we right here said, trying again doesn't mean just passing out your card at multiple beans and walk away. Right. So I go and I say, here's my number. I'm willing to help. And then I didn't get your number. I didn't reach out to you. I didn't call you. Remember how hard it was. You got to remember how hard it was and how scared you were. And so we want to stick our hands out. We're not trying to hunt them down. I mean, yeah, if I call you and you don't answer, I leave you a message, you don't call me back. Okay. But I mean, if they answer or they call you back, well, there you go. And then you can say, well, at least I didn't just go through the motions at a meeting and say, hey, here's my number. Call me if you want help, right? There's a lot of people in the program that wait until people come up and ask them for help. Now, here's what I'm going to tell you about that. I see the further I go in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more truth I see in everybody and everything I've ever heard, even the things I thought were unspiritual or not powerful or I didn't want a part of, that being one of them. Today, that's not my practice. I don't wait. But what I do understand is the amount of courage and willingness it takes to walk up to somebody and ask for help. Okay. I just believe that it is my duty to make myself available. And to seek it out the same way that I'm seeking this power in my life. That's just me though. I know a lot of people that have been very successful and I look up to them in Alcoholics Anonymous that won't put their name on a phone list, that won't go up and offer sponsorship to anybody. They'll see you buy a book at a meeting and say good luck with that without talking to someone. That's about as far as that goes. And then they wait. So, hats off to them. Whatever. my experience, I like to be kind. I like to make myself available. I just believe if I go too long without working with someone, I'm going to get loaded. That's me though. So that's why I'm going to do more workshops and just keep doing this. I thought I was going to have a break after tonight, right? And I'm already have two people that I'm starting through this work, two different people. So now two nights out of the week, I'm meeting with people 2 hours, and that wasn't my doing and it wasn't my decision and it wasn't anything I seek out. It just happened because I believe God understands how important it is for me to continue to do this. And I do believe the more you do it, the more it's going to fall into your lap, right? Just don't let the wheels spin and get stuck in this place of, I know I need to work with someone. I just don't know what that looks like or how that happens or what. I just pray on it, meditate about it, talk to people about it, continue to ask, go to meetings, raise your hand. Hey, I'm available. I go talk to newcomers, whatever it takes, right? Make it your primary purpose after tonight. Make it your primary purpose in Alcoholics Anonymous. Unless you're sitting on an amends right now that should have been done. That shit gets done first. But this becomes your primary purpose, okay, to go and work with somebody. The reason why I say that about the amends, don't be carrying those around. Don't leave after tonight and carry those around for any more than necessary at all. But do them. If you're sitting on some inventory, do it. See, these are the things that we have to get free of, be willing ourselves to do the, what does it say? Self-sacrifice, unselfish, constructive action. We got to be willing to do that, right? We cannot give away something or transmit something we don't have. Okay? So if you're clean and you're free and you're feeling good and you did your amends and your inventory's thorough, primary purpose right now, go find somebody to work with. So it says for us to go, do not spend too much time on any one situation to deny another alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely. With his first half dozen prospects, he often said that if he continued to work with them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. So suppose you're now making your second visit to a man. He's read this volume and he says he's prepared to go through the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Oh man, that feels good. Somebody comes back to you. Hey, I read the book. I'm ready. So having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know that you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell a story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Okay, so we're looking at the text of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're always looking for directions and guidance, okay? Nowhere in this chapter does it tell you how to take somebody through the steps, okay? What this chapter told us was how to have a discussion with them, how to open it up, what to talk about, how to approach it, family if necessary, what information to get, give them the book, have them read the book. Comes back to me and says, I read the book, I'm ready to go through the work. Here's what it says. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision. What step is that? Third step. Let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision. And tell his story. What step is that? Fifth step. That's what the book says. Give him the book. Let him know you're available when he wants to go through a third step and a fifth step. Now thank God that our, we'll call them forefathers, because they just are predecessors in this program. That's a better word. Predecessors in this program have come up with ways, better ways to take people through the work. But this also lets you know why in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's so many different ways people go through the steps because there's no clear-cut directions, right? That's why I love Big Book Awakening, because Dan Sherman put together a way that thousands of people could go through the work, experience depth and weight, and all do it in a very similar manner. I think that is the most powerful cement that binds people in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I love Big Book Awakening. And that's why I would ask of you, if you had a good experience with this, to carry this particular process and the way that we went through the work into you actively sponsoring other people. But I did want to point out to you what the book says. It's important. So we don't insist on him telling us our story if he prefers to consult somebody else. He may be broken homeless, and if he is, you might try and help him about getting a job, give him a little financial assistance. I've done that. But you should not deprive your family or creditors of money they should have. Perhaps you're going to want to take the man into your home for a few days. Be sure to use discretion. Be certain he will be welcomed by your family and that he is not trying to impose upon you for money, connections, or shelter. Permit that and you only harm him. You'll be making it possible for him to be insincere. Honesty and sincerity, remember, are the staples of prayer, surrender, open-mindedness, willingness. So we're going to help somebody out. We got to make sure they're sincere. You're going to move into my house, man? Let's get a little more information here. You may be aiding his destruction rather than his recovery, so we got to be careful. We're never going to avoid these responsibilities, but we're going to be sure that I'm doing the right thing if I assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of my recovery. The foundation stone of my recovery is helping other people. What did it say? And there is a solution. My life as an ex-problem drinker depends on my constant thought of others and how I may help meet their needs. My life depends on that. Do you believe that? What's my purpose? Page 77 told us. My purpose is to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. Do I believe that? How important is this to me? Do you believe this is the foundation stone of your recovery? A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act a good Samaritan every day. If need be, it may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, create interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money and your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you're going to have to call a doctor, administrate sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally, you're going to have to meet such conditions. So prepare yourself. To be of service. That means I don't get to dictate what that looks like. That means there's a level of unselfishness and sacrifice of my precious time and sometimes money and sometimes other things. We're going to seldom allow an alcoholic to live in our homes for a long time, though, right? It's not good for him and sometimes creates serious complications in the family. Though an alcoholic does not respond, there is no reason why you should neglect his family. You should continue to be friendly to them. The family should be offered your way of life. Should they accept and practice spiritual principles, there's a much better chance that the head of the family will recover. And even though he continues to drink, the family will find life more bearable. So there may be a time where you're working with somebody and they're falling apart and their family's calling you and you're talking to them. And the advice here says to advise them to continue to live on spiritual principles. If they're not engaged in Al-Anon, advise them to go and inquire about it. Advise them to continue to be strong, to lean on God, to talk to people that have had the same experience. And maybe the head of the family will come back and recover. Or the wife of the family or whatever. Remember, this is 1939. Most of this is talking about men and heads of the family and things of that sort. But we've evolved. That's another reason why I like Big Book Awakening. Because I'm a drug addict too, man. I used to spend so much time contemplating, do I even belong here? You know? I'm just a pothead. No, man. I'm a drug addict. And I'm an alcoholic. So I belong. It's a beautiful thing. It took me a long time to understand that. So for the type of alcoholic who is able and willing to get well, little charity in the ordinary sense of the word is needed or wanted. See, so someone who's totally willing and want, you're not going to have to help them out too much. I mean, they might be down and out. I'm always willing to offer financial help to somebody that's worthy of it, that's not abusive or, I don't know if abusive is the word, like in this position of wanting to like take advantage type of thing, you know? But man, if you honestly need help and God has blessed me, I'm going to help. It feels good. It really does. I mean, talk to your spouse or partner or whatever first. So the men who cry for money and shelter before conquering alcohol are on the wrong track. Yet we do go to great extremes to provide each other with these very things when such action is warranted. This may seem inconsistent, but we think it's not, and that's what I just talked about, right? We're not trying to give them something that they don't need or something they're leaning on or feeling like I can't recover if I don't have this, right? I just need 500 bucks in my bank account. If I just had that, like I would be able to do these steps, I'd feel more comfortable. Well, no, man, no. We need to have another conversation. You know, like what's really going on? So I tell them you can't make your car payment. You can't get to a meeting. Need a little bit of help? Okay. Let me help you. It is not the matter of giving that is the question, but when and how to give that often makes a difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than God. As soon as they start to rely on us, and we got to be careful. Another thing that will crop up in your journey of working with other alcoholics and watching them recover and helping them, and they're leaning on you sometimes for finances, all the time for advice, trusting you, confiding in you, your ego will blow up. Be careful. I had to watch my ego throughout the whole workshop. There's been particular instances and times and parts of where I thought I needed to do this and help this particular person and these things needed to happen. And I had to recognize what was really happening, right? And it's hard because this is altruistic. I'm doing this out of the goodness of my heart. But underlying all that, I'm doing it because I don't want to drink. But I have to understand who I am without God and without this program and what dangers are very close if I'm not careful. Okay. So it's when and how to give. And that often makes a difference between failure and success. He clamors for this or that, claiming that he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, you simply do not stop drinking as long as we place dependence on God ahead of dependence upon other people. I'm going to read you guys something out of my book. This is page 116. It says, some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. This is a parallel reference to that portion of the big book out of the Bible. My health may fail and my spirit may grow weak, but God remains the strength of my heart. He is mine forever. As long as I place dependence upon people ahead of dependence upon God, I may not overcome this drinking problem. God remains the strength of my heart. He is mine forever. And this is what I wrote. When we get to our 12th suggestion, it's time to carry this message to others. This song tells me where my strength must come from. Even in bad health and low spirits, I must trust in God for strength. The big book reminds me of the hard knocks that we have been through in our journey. In order to truly carry a message of recovery to someone who is new and struggling, I must share my experience. The ability to find strength in God even through hard times has kept me sober. No outside circumstances have played a part in this truth. I must be very adamant about where my reliance has been placed. This also reminds our prospect not to rely too much on us for strength that can only come from the power of God. And the consideration says, where have you placed human reliance above God reliance? So we're going to burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trusts in God and clean house. Now for the domestic problem, there may be a divorce, a separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family, he has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family may be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. And we wrote here, can I see that arguments and fault finding are not spiritual and that they make me useless and ineffective in helping my family and others? Now we're starting to transfer into the last part of the 12th step here in this chapter. Right? What does the 12th step say? Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try, key word, we try to carry this message to other alcoholics and practice these principles in all of our affairs. What's our code? Love and tolerance of others, right? That's right. So we're practicing that code at home. We're practicing the principles of patience, kindliness, tolerance, and love. That's why our ninth step prayer says, I'm going to ask each morning for God to show me the way, right? It says there's a long period of reconstruction ahead with the family. Even when you think everything's all good, think a little bit harder. Think about what you can bring to the table through concentrating on your own spiritual demonstration. So in many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover that they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. That's kind of where I'm transcending to today. If my wife wants to talk about, you know, where she finds her own faults and defects of character and places she's lacking, instead of how it used to be, you need to get a spiritual solution like me. You need to pray and meditate, do this and read, and you should probably do some sort of treatment. You're carrying around a lot of stuff. It doesn't work, man. In fact, it has the opposite effect. Remember, actions speak louder than words. So after they have seen tangible results, the family will perhaps want to go along. These things will come to pass naturally and in good time provided. However, the alcoholic continues to demonstrate that he can be sober, not just sober, considerate, and helpful, regardless of what anyone says or does. Whew. That's going to take a lifetime. That's going to take one day at a time. Can I demonstrate that not only I am sober, but I can be considerate and helpful regardless of what anyone says or does? No, man, not even close, right? Why do I allow how you feel or what you say affect me? Because I'm human and I need the power of God in my life. It's a reminder to me of how much this reliance is important. It lets me know, see, those things aren't going away. That's my humanity. But there's a level of awareness today where they become unacceptable. And if tolerable, even for a short period of time, they become really, really uncomfortable. I have to do something about it. Or I suffer. Ultimately, that's what I recognize. I suffer. And I'm carrying it around. And what underlies everything? Alcohol and drugs. Whether I want to believe it or not, I will circle back to that. So, of course, we all fall much below this standard many times. Well, I'm glad they wrote that sentence because of what I just said. But we must try to repair the damage immediately, lest we pay a penalty of what? A spree. See? What's underlying everything? Don't ever forget it, man. Right? We cease fighting anything and everyone, even alcohol. Well, behind everything and everyone is alcohol. And drugs. We just don't see it. Some of us are pretty far away from that right now. I'm not. I mean, I don't even have 2 years yet. So it's pretty close to me. I just went to Las Vegas, came back. I was sober. Miracle. So that was cool. It was really cool. I could have used a Valium on that airplane though. I'll tell you. Like, man, I don't know that I'll be doing that again. So I didn't really care for that. You get claustrophobic in sobriety. Something has kind of shifted. I don't know. It used to be like that. So, if there's divorce or separation, there should be no undue haste for a couple to get together. The man should be sure of his recovery. The wife should fully understand his new way of life. So you're dealing with someone that's in the middle of a separation. They say, I can't do this unless I get my wife back. Remember, job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not recover as long as we place reliance upon things human over reliance upon God. Wait a minute, man. You're telling me I got to rely on God and work this program right now is more important than getting back with my wife? Right now, yeah. Because without it, you're getting loaded. You got no chance of getting back with your wife or your husband. So the wife should fully understand his new way of life. If the old relationship is to be resumed, it must be on a better basis, trusting and relying upon God, since the former did not work. This means a new attitude and spirit all around. Sometimes It is to the best interest of all concerned that a couple remain apart. That's tough. All situations are different. I don't particularly care to give that advice. I would kind of like to walk somebody through their own truth to maybe see that on their own. Obviously, no rule can be laid down. Let the alcoholic continue his program day by day in spite of anything. When the time for living together has come, it will be apparent in both parties. Here I have to trust God. All these things we transcribed in this chapter are so important. I'll tell you guys again, if you're staring at a book that's not fully transcribed, it's another thing you need to do before going out and work with someone could be of utmost importance. You got to have the tool in front of you. You got to be able to refer to this stuff. And when you're working one-on-one, you're really looking at this stuff, right? Remember, we're doing this on a group level. It is a workshop per se, right? And hopefully each one of you has a sponsor you can talk to, rely on, and lean into and kind of grow more with this stuff. Go a little deeper, okay? Let no alcoholic say he can't recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for some reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It's dependent upon his relationship with God. See, now I'm really stressing the spiritual feature freely here. And I'm telling this person that, look, man, even though it seems like your life is depends on all of these circumstances, the separation, the misery at home, the loss of your job, the finances falling apart, the only thing this is dependent upon is your relationship with God. It's a tough pill to swallow. It's a hard journey to walk. Remember, we talked about third step turning and walking south, man. It's scary. But we got to be honest with these people. We're not trying to sugarcoat anything. We've seen men and women get well whose families have not returned at all. We've seen others slip when the family came back too soon. We wrote here, trust God, not stuff. This next paragraph is one of my favorite paragraphs in the whole book. You should read this one every morning. I suggest you guys, once you start working with someone, you check this paragraph out quite often. It says, both you and the new man or woman must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. This is on page 100. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power. And you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. That's beautiful. So beautiful. Job or no job, wife or no wife, right? Now, if you ask me, if you took my job away, you emptied my bank account, my wife left me, I lost my home right now, would I go drink? I don't know. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that question. I'm not going to lie to you. That's ridiculous. I'd be miserable, and I might. We're talking about when a man walks or a woman walks through that door, and they're desperate, and they're torn up, and they don't have anything, and they're talking about, I got to have this, this, and this. Hold on. Wait a minute. What I'm going to tell you right now is that your recovery, it depends on your relationship with God and what that looks like. And until you believe that, you're going to be spinning your wheels trying to get all this stuff back. This is how I'm talking to a new person. It's not telling me that if it took all that away right now, I should be okay. There are things that tell me that I'm supposed to find joy in the midst of struggles, right? Presence of God in hard times. Abby told Bill in his story that he would not be able to sustain the trials and low spots, the certain trials and low spots ahead without self-sacrifice and intensive work with another alcoholic. So it's the answer. So maybe diving into helping more people would be the answer for me if something like that happened. I pray to God it never does. I don't know. When working with a man and his family, you should take care not to participate in their quarrels. You may spoil your chance of being helpful if you do, but urge upon a man's family that he has been a very sick person and should be treated accordingly. You should warn against arousing resentment or jealousy. You should point out that his defects of character are not going to disappear overnight. Show them that he has entered upon a period of growth. Ask them to remember, when they are impatient, the blessed fact of his sobriety. So if somebody is on this journey, they are struggling with their personal relationships, they're still in the bedevilments, but they're working the steps, they're confiding in you, you end up having a conversation with the family, it's okay to say, look, let's give him a little leeway here. Let's remember what he was going through or she was going through, how she was. She's sober. We're going to program. Let's give her a chance. Okay. That's different than if a wife or a husband calls you and this person has 10 years of sobriety. They've been through the work with you and they start to tell you he's cheating on me. He's yelling and screaming at me. He's abusing me. Okay. Well, those are different circumstances. That's not what they're talking about here. Talking about in the beginning, things are tough. They found a way to remain sober. Sometimes sobriety has to be enough, especially in the beginning. And when you guys have an extremely bad day in life and you make it through sober, then you know what I'm talking about when I say sobriety has to be enough sometimes. It's okay. That's another thing they don't say too much in the Big Book Awakening meetings, and they lean so heavily on the power of God, which I totally respect, and it's attractive to me, and I want that. But my truth is that there are days in my life when sobriety is enough. It's enough. I made it through the day. Usually a really bad day. Screaming or yelling at my wife. Big fight. Big falling out. Job falls through, lose a lot of money, something like just, oh my God, what just happened? Some tragedy. It could be a plethora of things. Ultimately, we circle back and lean on God for some comfort, but doesn't always happen in that 24-hour period. And in that moment, sobriety might just have to be enough. So if you've been successful in solving your own domestic problem, tell the newcomer's family how that was accomplished. You know, I can truly share this with people that are struggling. I don't have advice for them when it comes to infidelity. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. It is the biggest mistake I've ever made in my life. I don't regret it because I forgive myself about it. And I wouldn't be sitting here with you guys today if it wasn't for it. But what I can share with people is how this process and program has helped me to overcome it. Not my wife, because that's on her time. But in a sense, my actions and the change that has occurred in me is helping to heal. Sometimes when you share that with people, if you have that experience, it's very, very powerful. Because the level of hopelessness and despair that's happening in that moment is unexplainable. Like, you just feel like the world has just come crashing down on you. So if you have that type of experience, share it with them. Let them know. If your marriage was a mess and today it's not, talk about it. In this way, that you can set them on the right track without becoming critical of them. See, I'm not judging you because I've done same or worse. I'm just letting you know. The story of how you and your wife settled your difficulties is worth any amount of criticism, right? There's probably 99 out of 100 women that my wife sat down and told them the story about what I've done would say, you are crazy for being with that man. I'm still going to share the difficulties with you, no matter what kind of criticism comes my way. Because God has been the healing in that situation. So assuming that we're spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things that alcoholics are not supposed to do. So now we're going to talk about being safe and protected, just like our 10-step promise says. Remember the third part of the 10th step, safe and protected. People have said that we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. Now, remember, we come into this program. It doesn't tell me in the first, second, third, fourth, fifth step, hey, Jason, you should be okay around alcohol. It doesn't tell me that until I've admitted powerlessness, unmanageability, recognize a malady in my life, believe that God can get me past it one day at a time, turn my life over to Him, did a thorough inventory, confessed all of my exact natures and shortcomings to another man or woman, confided in God and was willing for Him to remove those natures, those exact natures of my wrongs, made a list of the people I harmed, and most important, went out and made amends properly, telling them my real exact natures of my wrongs and the resentments I've been carrying around about them and how it's been driving my actions. And even if they don't know it, this is how I've been feeling and thinking about you. For that, I apologize. And it's driven me to act a fool. Then I get to a 10th step where I'm safe and protected, right? So there's a journey here. So this isn't saying come into the program and you ought to be able to go be around alcohol. So what does that mean? That mean maybe in the beginning we might want to suggest, hey man, maybe don't go to the bars. Maybe kind of shy away from all your party buddies for a minute, even if you know them for 30. I've known all my friends for 30, 40 years, man. I will tell you today, I don't hang out with them as much as I used to. Doesn't mean I don't love them. But when we are safe and protected, our experience shows that all that stuff's not necessarily so. We don't have to be, we don't, what does it say, avoid temptation, right? We recoil from it like a hot flame. That's what we do. Doesn't mean we don't have fleeting thoughts. I was in that hotel room, size of an apartment, just super rad, with the vape pen and some gummies, and don't think the thought didn't cross my mind. Going to the Sphere to see the Eagles and poker and gambling and women, and it's like, whoa, nah, safe and protected, right? Safe and protected. Don't beat yourself up for fleeting thoughts. That's your humanity. That's a reminder and a level of awareness that God reliance is what's important here. And that's the only thing that's going to get you through, right? Sometimes it feels good too. I came home feeling good about it. Like, wow, I did it. I have the experience. Like, I actually went to Vegas and came home sober. Holy shit. I never done that. Who does that anyway? I mean, people in AA do, but again, this is all new to me. I've spent way more time getting loaded in my life than I have here with you guys. Way more. So we meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them, someone that's been all the way through the work, can't meet these conditions, they still have an alcoholic mind. There's something the matter with your spiritual status. Think about that. So if you've been through the work, you're working with people, you're going to meetings, and there's something about being around alcohol that just gets you, being around drugs. Now, granted, I mean, if you, let's say meth was your thing. I mean, I'm not recommending going over to a house where someone's doing rails, man. That's just not, or burners, right? Or whatever. I don't know if people smoke it nowadays, but when I was doing dope, they were called burners. So I don't recommend having that. Like, that's a little much for me. I don't know. But maybe you'd be safe and protected. All I know is we can meet these conditions every day. And if you can't, and you've been through the work, you have an alcoholic mind. Remember, our problem centers in our mind, and there's something the matter with your spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice camp cap. And even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcoholic problem. In our belief, any scheme of combating alcoholism which proposes to shield the sick man from temptation is doomed to failure. If the alcoholic tries to shield himself, he may succeed for a time, but he usually winds up the bigger explosion than ever. We have tried these methods. These attempts to do the impossible have always failed. So see, they transferred, as we've gotten to the second portion of the 12th step, from us talking to these new prospect, our protege, now they're talking to us. And they're talking right back to us, telling us, hey, you're going to practice these principles in all your affairs, right? We're not going to the new guy, talking to him about 12 step right now. If anything, I can open the book up to page 989 and say, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with alcoholics. And I can look him in the eye and say, that's where my goal is, to get you there. I can also read to him this paragraph on page 100. You and the new man must walk day by day in a path to spiritual progress. Let him know, hey, we're doing this together. Right? And if we persist, remarkable things are going to happen. Pretty cool paragraph to share with them. But right now they're talking to us about practicing our principles in all of our affairs. So our rule is not to avoid a place where there is drinking. And now this is in italics. If we have a legitimate reason for being there. It's not telling me to go have a non-alcoholic beer at the bar Tuesdays and Fridays because I feel like I'm safe and protected. That's ridiculous, right? If I have a legitimate reason for being there, perfect example for being safe and protected, I live here. I have a legitimate reason for being here. There is always a bottle of wine on my kitchen counter. There is always weed in the filing cabinet in the garage. Okay. I have a legitimate reason for being here. If I can't handle that, something's wrong with my spiritual condition, my status, and I have an alcoholic mind, something's up. That's what I had to recognize, that I kept going back out. I shared a lot of that with you guys, allowing my wife's sobriety to be contingent to mine, my own recovery, and I can't do it if she doesn't, right? Nah, that's not true. Safe and protected. I go buy her a bottle of wine. So that includes bars, nightclubs, dances, receptions, weddings, even plain ordinary whoopee parties. To a person who's had experience with an alcoholic, this may seem like tempting providence, but it isn't. You will note that we made an important qualification. Therefore, ask yourself on each occasion, have I any good social business or personal reason for going to this place? Right? Or am I expecting to steal a little vicarious pleasure from the atmosphere of such places? If you answer these questions satisfactorily, you need have no apprehension. Go or stay away, whichever seems best. So if you get to this place and you're like, you know what, I'm safe and protected, but I don't feel like I need to go to, you know, oh, it's my friend's birthday. They're all going to be there. I'll be drinking. Well, I can just call them, say happy birthday. And, you know, or they're having a Super Bowl party with all the homies and they're all going to be drinking and barbecuing and partying. Okay. So we're not avoiding it. You're making a decision to either stay or go away. Right. And you're only there if you have a legitimate reason to be there. If you're not obligated and you had a reason to go if you wanted to, but something's kind of telling you, I'd just rather not, I'm kind of over it. Nothing wrong with that. Trust your intuition. Be sure that you're on solid spiritual ground before you start and that your motive in going is thoroughly good. Do not think of what you will get out of the occasion. Think of what you can bring to it. But if you're shaky, you better work with another alcoholic instead. They keep circling us back to that. When in doubt, work with someone. When it hurts, work with someone. When you're struggling, work with someone. When all else fails, work with other alcoholics. Okay. Bill told us he had this sudden and profound experience. It was as if, what's he say, the wind just rushed through him. And then on the very next page, he's talking about being miserable and suffering from depression. And the only thing that saved him was working with another alcoholic. Why sit with the long face in places where there is drinking, sighing about the good old days? If it's a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those there. If a business occasion, go and attend your business enthusiastically. If you're with a person who wants to eat in a bar, by all means go along. Let your friends know that they are not to change their habits on your account. At a proper time and place, explain to all your friends why alcohol disagrees with you. If you do this thoroughly, few people will ask you to drink. While you were drinking, you were withdrawing from life little by little. Now you're getting back into the social life of this world. Don't start to withdraw again just because your friends drink. So we lived this isolated life. Fair weather friends. Don't do that to yourself. Here they're going to tell us again what our job is, our purpose. Your job is to now be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. It just tells us over and over and over again. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives and God will keep you unharmed. Keep on the firing line of life with good motives. Many of us keep liquor in our homes. We often need to carry green recruits through a severe hangover. Some of us still serve it to our friends, provided they're not alcoholic. But some of us think we should not serve liquor to anyone. We don't argue this question. We feel that each family, in the light of their own circumstances, ought to decide for themselves. We are careful never to show intolerance or hatred of drinking as an institution. Experience shows that such an attitude is not helpful to anyone. Every new alcoholic looks for this spirit among us and is immensely relieved when he finds we are not witch burners. A spirit of intolerance might repel alcoholics whose lives could have been saved had it not been for such stupidity. We would not even do the cause of temperate drinking any good, for no one drinker in 1,000 likes to be told anything about alcohol by one who hates it. So keep that in mind. We're not here to judge our friends or tell them who's alcoholic or who's not. We have conversation with fellows in Alcoholics Anonymous about the people in our lives. Like, hey, I think, you know, my wife needs some help or my friend could use some help, right? But we're not. They got to come up and ask us, right? Or show their face in a meeting. And then that gives us the right to go and say, hey, man, if you need help, I'm right here. We can kind of leave it at that, you know. We're not trying to harass anybody. And not everybody's ready to go through this work. Some people wait years. Hey, whatever. I don't recommend it, but. And then some people are 2 days sober and want to go through the work. We got to kind of contemplate that. I heard it talked about in the doctor's opinion about a man's mind being cleared before he's able to grasp this. You know, I think 30 days is kind of a good enough amount of clarity. That's my opinion, my experience. If someone came up to me and had like 1 week of sobriety and said, hey, I want to go through steps. I'd say, okay, look, let's talk every day. Check this out. Here's the book in the interval. Read this. Right? Let's get to the 30-day mark. If you still decide you want to do it, we'll do it. Let's do it. Okay, you got to have some kind of clarity here, right? Some people think that's harsh. I'm not telling you what to do or what not to do. That's my experience. That's the way that I do it. And to me, it shows a little bit of willingness because you're going to suffer, man. I ain't going to lie to you. These first couple months of this is going to be hell. Let's just say, you ain't going to snap your fingers. Bam. Let's get into the steps and bam. I'm 2 weeks sober and I'm feeling great. Nah, that's not real. Dude, that's ridiculous is what that is. 2, 3, 4 weeks sober, you're feeling worse than you've ever felt in your life. You're scared. You're anxious. You can't sleep. You can't eat right. You can't go to the bathroom right. You can't function right. Everything's whacked out, right? We want to be there for people in that point. And we want to relate and say, man, I've been there. I've done it. Let's just keep talking every day. Let's read a little something, you know? And if they believe, you can always say, hey, look, let's do some prayer. You want to pray together? You know? I'm trying to scare you away, but ultimately, I really want you to contemplate something. And this is a little harsh, okay? But this is my opinion. If God scares you so much, then go on and let the bottle bring you back until he doesn't scare you anymore. Scary sucks. I get it. But hey, come on, man. I'm going to sugarcoat the solution. I'm not going to lie to you. Right? And if you tell me I'm having struggle believing, but I'm willing to believe it. Okay. I just want to do this work. Okay. Let's just do the work. Right? But I'm so wadded up and blocked by this God thing. And you guys are religious and I don't get this. And this is a cult. And man, I'm just like, I can't take this. And well, I can't share my solution with you, you know. Let the bottle bring you back. I'll be right here waiting for you, man. I ain't judging you, right? There is a level of desperation that is required here. And remember, when we walked in the doors, that desire that we had in that moment was a necessity. And a lot of us lose that level of desperation as we walk forward, and then we wonder why we're struggling. Where'd the desperation go? Is it not that bad? Do you not suffer from consequences in your life? I don't know. Does it have to get worse? Do you got to lose everything? I don't know. Keep going back to that bottle and you'll find out, though. I promise you that. You will find out. It's only a matter of time. If you're an alcoholic. Every new alcoholic looks for this spirit among us and is immensely relieved when he finds that we are not witch burners. A spirit of intolerance might repel alcoholics whose lives could have been saved had it not been for such stupidity. We would not even do the cause of the temperate drinker any good. For not one drinker in 1,000 likes to be told anything about alcohol by one who hates it. Someday we hope that Alcoholics Anonymous will help the public to better realization of the gravity of the alcoholic problem. But we shall be of little use if our attitude is one of bitterness, hostility. Drinkers will not stand for it. After all, our problems were of our own making. Selfishness, self-centeredness, self-will. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything we have to. Bottles were only the symbol. Drinking is not a problem. Okay, what did the four steps say? Alcohol was but a symptom. We had to get down to the causes and conditions. So when you're taking someone through the work and they're telling you they're so adamant about their problem is drugs and alcohol, remind them that alcohol is but a symptom. Our goal is to get down to the causes and conditions and remind them that bottles were only a symbol because we have to stop fighting anybody or anything. So my drinking is a symbol of my spiritual malady, and selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear crop up and block me off from God. Now there's four more chapters. We stop here, right? The program of action stops on page 104. It's another thing I don't necessarily know that I totally agree with when we go through the work. I would love to sit here with you guys for 4 more weeks and go through the chapter on the wives, go through the chapter on the employers, go through the chapter on the family afterward, go through the chapter on vision for you. I highly suggest that you study those 4 chapters. It, especially if you're an employer, you want to read the employers. Especially if you have a wife or a husband and you can get them to read to the wives or the husband. Especially if you have a family for the family afterward. And all of us should check out A Vision for You. You can do the very same thing. Find sentences, take those statements, turn them into questions. Make it personal to you. Something to check out. When you go one-on-one with someone, I always offer it to somebody. At the end, we can keep working for 4 more weeks. Go through those. We've got to do some more writing. It's very enlightening. Please remember what your primary purpose is from here on out. Take this message and carry it to somebody. It's our job. It's our duty. We do it out of the goodness of our heart, looking for nothing in return, with a firm belief that nothing will make us immune from drinking more than that intensive work. It's not a selfish thing. It's a belief. I believe this program will work for me. I believe that I can remain safe and protected. I believe that through working with another alcoholic, or an addict, that I can continue to be reminded of my own disease and to be helpful to other people. That is our goal. And that's what you are very adamant about with the next person you take through the work in the beginning. Hey, man, I'm going to ask you one thing and one thing only. When we're done, you go out there and find somebody to work with. And if you build a relationship close enough, and you're really engaged in this program, you help them find somebody. I mean, like if someone asks me tomorrow to take them through the work, I'm gonna hit up Tim. I'm gonna say, hey, I just took a guy through the work. He's looking for somebody. That's kind of how this thing works, right? So that's the beauty of staying engaged and staying in contact with these people in this process. And if you take this and you never go to another BBA meeting and you don't ever talk to the step guide or sponsor again, I implore you, I beg of you to take this message and this experience and carry it into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not with arrogance, not with superiority, not with this idea that this is a better way or the only way, but with an attitude that you had an experience of depth and weight, and if they are willing, you will share it with them. And we will allow this process to continue to grow, and the cement that binds us of going through the work the same way will continue to flourish, right? I'm not a big believer of this, only this group and this fellowship. That's ridiculous. Big Book Awakening compared to Alcoholics Anonymous on a whole is like a grain of sand on the beach. So it's important for us to continue to carry this message. That's how big this thing really is. So contemplate that and use this grace and this gift and this loveliness that has occurred to go and bless other people. And with that, I will leave you. I love you. I'm going to stop the recording.